Welcome to the Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Tuesday, November the 23rd, 2021. On this edition of the Politocrat, money, money, money. Money does matter tonight. I'll be talking about money and connecting it in a certain way with several of the themes of this episode, right after this. ABBA, money, money, money. And I tell you, it's interesting. I begin today, dear listener, with that, because this was one of those days where money was definitely part of the headline story, in at least some of the stories that caught my eye as we go through this part of Tuesday. And it is Tuesday. Welcome, dear listener, to the Politocrat Daily Podcast. My name is Omar Moore, and you are a loyal listener, and a respected listener, and a valued listener. And I thank you for listening once again, and again, and again. Please spread the word about the Politocrat Daily Podcast. I do value you, truly. I do respect you. As I often say, even if you'd never listened to this podcast, I respect you as a person. That, to me, is even more important than you listening to this podcast. Of course, I would like for you to listen to this podcast, but even if you had never, ever dreamed of listening to it, I would say this to you. I respect you, and thank you. Thank you indeed. And we are on the crest of the what is called the Thanksgiving holiday here in the United States, and just a couple more days away from it. And I hope that if you are someone who observes Thanksgiving in that way. I mean, I observe it, but not in the ways that historically it's been celebrated or lauded in this country. I look at it very differently, more somberly, but also with gratefulness. It's you know, being grateful for what you have, thankful and grateful. And so maybe tomorrow I might start a list of people who I'm really thankful for. And you would be at the top of that list, dear listener. I'm grateful for you. So, I mean, maybe I should just end the suspense now and just start that list. And you are at the top of it. I mean, thank you for listening to this podcast. And we are a couple of days away from Thanksgiving. And I hope you're well. I hope that, again, whether you observe Thanksgiving or not, or mark it or anything like that, I just hope that you are safe and sound and are in good health. I really do. And that you're in a better place, that your spirits are a little higher than perhaps they were yesterday. And if they aren't a little higher, then I hope that your spirits do become a little higher. And I'm not talking with alcohol or drugs, although you can't really get high on alcohol. But I just hope that things turn your way. It's a difficult time for so many millions of people all over the world. So again, I just want to acknowledge that, and I want to say thank you to you for spending a little time with me here on this podcast on this Tuesday. Now look, money, money, money. I don't want to stray from this, because the first thing that jumps out of my mind, and there's a few things that I really want to talk about that connect all together here. Money, money, money. The first story that jumps out for me is this story out of Charlottesville, Virginia. Now, you may remember a couple of weeks ago, I did an episode on the trials, four trials, that only one of which was really being covered by the corporate news media. Well, you know, like, I don't view the corporate news media, but of course, when you get clips on social media of the corporate news media, you see the corporate news media. And what you see are really references only to one of the trials that had been going on over these last few weeks. And that, of course, was the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse, who is now Kyle Rittenwalk because he walked on all charges, as I told you he would do. And that was the trial that got the bulk of the corporate news media's attention, based on the clips I'd seen on social media. And that had been the talking point and the central focus of the corporate news media over the last few weeks. Now, the other trials that were going on, and there was at least three other trials going on, and I talked about all the rest of these trials too, but now, at the risk of forgetting one of them, let me make sure that I do get the other two in. One of them, of course, is the trial of the father and son, Mike Michaels, although I shouldn't even be calling them father and son. It sounds like some kind of cozy outfit, but they are not. These are murderers. And the Brian person, the William Brian, a thug and a criminal and a murderer, who, you know, was on Chris Cuomo's show last year. And, you know, I talked about this before. You know, they interviewed him while he still hadn't been arrested yet, and they interviewed him. And pardon me. Chris Cuomo interviewed him. Chris Cuomo, anyway, I've had enough of that. And God, forgive me. Chris Cuomo, gosh. The apple really does not fall far from the sibling, does it, with Chris Cuomo? It really doesn't. I'll just never forget when I used to watch the corporate news media and I'd watch him and his brother skylarking on primetime television. All the while, women were saying, that guy that you're skylarking with, your brother, is a predator. He's a sexual harasser. He's a serial predator. And this guy shouldn't be governor. So the less I say about Chris Cuomo, the better. But I will say that New York Assembly, the New York State Assembly, found, of course, they found it today or yesterday, weeks and weeks after Cuomo had already said goodbye and quit his job, was forced to, as governor. The New York State Assembly, by the way, found that Cuomo had, there was so much evidence of this guy blatantly doing all these things. You know, New York State Assembly found there was so much overwhelming evidence that Andrew Cuomo, as governor, sexually harassed multiple numbers of women. This guy's a piece of garbage. I mean, come on. Scumbucket. Honestly, really. And these are the filthy people who are in power. And I don't care which party they come from. They are filth. And they need to go. And I'm glad he's out. But, you know, he's probably got some lobbying job somewhere. He's at some law firm in New York or wherever. And he's just, you know, collecting paychecks for being on someone's board. He's probably on all these boards. Can we get him off all these boards? I mean, it's just despicable. Anyway, so it was the trial of Brian and McMichaels and McMichaels in the lynching of Ahmaud Arbery. That trial is one of the trials that was going on. And by the way, today that went to the jury. Then there was another trial, which now for some reason I don't remember what on earth the damn thing was. That's just so weird that I don't even remember that. Because I mentioned Rittenhouse, I mentioned the Michaels and Brian trial, and I'm mentioning now the trial that I really want to get to, which is it's a civil trial of these white racists in Charlottesville. And they had been sued for millions upon millions of dollars worth of damages. And this was connected to the 2017 racist rally in Charlottesville. You may remember, and I've talked about this a number of times, including, I think, maybe yesterday, the day before, that Heather Heyer had been murdered in 2017 at that same rally. And she was there as a counter-protester with the Black Lives Matter movement. She was part of that movement in Charlottesville, and they were counter-protesting, counter-demonstrating against this racist-ass rally with people walking around with swastikas. People walking around with stars and bars from the Confederate battle flag. People walking around with Klan outfits on. I mean, this is just disgusting. So there was a lawsuit against that group of racist people, and it was a mixed verdict, as it was reported by the Associated Press, as a jury came up with, and this lasted for about a month, this trial in the United States District Court. there was a deadlock on two key claims. But the jury did find that on at least, I think, four other claims, that these 17 racists and leaders of these organizations were guilty and had to pay out $26 million plus in damages connected to the violence from that rally 4 years ago in Charlottesville. So that is a major victory for the plaintiffs, who has suffered all kinds of emotional injuries, physical injuries, and all kinds of things, PTSD, from these 2 days of demonstrations. There was, people do not talk about this nearly enough, but there was a young brother, young black teenager, I think he was 19 or so years old, and I don't think people remember this, but you should. He was being beaten with 2x4s by a bunch of at least 6 or 7 or 8 white racists who were smashing him across his face, across his back. There's shots of him in a parking lot being smacked and smashed in with these 2x4s from these white racists. I don't know if you remember that. And he was completely covered in blood. I mean, this is just horrible. And I don't know if he was one of the plaintiffs or not, but certainly this was a significant step today. $26 million worth of damages they were ordered to pay out. $26 million plus in damages. It's big. That's a big story. Now, whether or not they actually will pay that is another story, because you know what's going to happen is it's going to get bogged down in appeals, and the courts are going to drag their feet on this, blah, blah, blah. And even if they don't drag their feet on it, and even if the appeal is not successful, it will be very interesting to see how they're going to try to get these bunch of racists to pay this money. And I hope they do. They may do liens on their property. They may do all kinds of things. And that money is not going to all be paid off at once. You can bet they're not going to just say, oh, here's your $26 million, shove it to these plaintiffs. They are obviously not going to do that. But the point is that this jury verdict in this civil trial today was massive, ordering these 17 white racist leaders and their organizations to pay out more than $26 million in damages. That's one of the biggest, I think, probably the biggest damage awards for a group of racists that I can think of. I can't think of any civil trial where racists have been ordered to pay out this kind of money. You know, openly racist people, that is, you know. And that's a massive, massive victory. The plaintiff's lawyer, Roberta Kaplan, said that this sends a loud message, and she's absolutely right. Now, I would love to know about these other two counts that were not looked at, these two key claims that the jury were deadlocked on. I would love to find out what those were. Now, they can, if they choose to, these plaintiffs can certainly push that again and reach and get a retrial on the two counts where the jury was deadlocked. They can certainly do that. And we will see if the plaintiff's lawyers decide to do that again, decide to push that again, and if they're going to in the United States District Court, whether they're going to, because they should. And, you know, this is a really important case, which I don't think is going to get the kind of attention that it really warrants. And so I just hope that these people do pay up this money. And certainly these other two claims that were deadlocked, I really would love to know how much money that was. And I really would like to know what the story about that is. Because again, this was 2 days of protests, violent protests. Not just the Saturday where Heather Heyer was murdered, but also the Friday. Don't forget, these people also were swarming the University of Virginia campus. Don't forget that. And then they were carrying their swastikas and tiki torches there. And These people are just disgusting people. And there's so many people in this country and in other countries who think like them, who feel the way they do about these things. They're just so wretchedly evil. They really are. I do believe that there's evil that exists. I do. I don't believe that's a fairy tale thing. I do believe that people can be evil and that they are evil. I also believe that people are good and can be good. But I really do believe in such a thing called evil, where people are just downright evil, do some heinous things to each other, as we do on this planet, some of us. But this verdict today was massive. Now let's see what happens with this appeal. Let's see if this appeal gets smacked down, which I hope it does. And also let's see how they're going to collect this money from these racists, because I mean, a verdict like this will absolutely break their backs, which is what I'm happy about, because money is running all this stuff. It really is. That's why, hence the money, money, money from ABBA earlier to start this episode. And by the way, ABBA, speaking of money, 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 they have a brand new album out. Their first album out in over, 30 years, I think. It's called Voyage, V-O-Y-A-G-E. Voyage, ABBA. Gosh, in the 1970s, they were it, man. They were it. ABBA. Waterloo was their big hit. And by the way, I think it was 1972 or 3 or 4 that came out. By the way, that I think was a song that won them the Eurovision Song Contest back in the day. For those of you who do not know what the Eurovision Song Contest is, I urge you to go to the internet and type up Eurovision space song space contest. And then hit enter. Or return, whichever showed up on the keyboard that you happen to have. Or if it's on your phone, well, you know what to do. There's a return button on there too. But anyway, ABBA and Voyage is a brand new album. It's the first album, like I said, in over 30 years for them. It's been a long time. And you know, hey, you know, that's the money, money, money stuff. And I just again hope that these racists, I really do hope that these people are, their backs are broken with their businesses. I really do, because this is what has happened in this country forever. These groups don't get punished, and the way to punish them is hit them in their pocketbook, and I'm glad that this jury recognized that. So that's one thing, money-wise. The other thing, money-wise, that I am going to get to after the break is President Biden. He made a speech earlier today on the state of the economy in the United States and gas prices, which are a massive, massive problem here. I mean, it's a massive problem all over the world, actually, across the world. But here in the United States, the prices of gas, and I know in some other countries it's astronomical as well, but here in California, particularly in San Francisco, we have the highest gas prices in the country. I mean, we do. We have the highest gas prices in all of the United States. Right here in San Francisco. I mean, we have, if I'm not mistaken, and I can definitely take this off the top of my head, but probably better not to do that, because I want to actually get this figure bang on correct and not even be off by one or two. I want to get this absolutely right. But the gas prices are such in San Francisco, according to AAA, the American Automobile Association, the gas prices in San Francisco, the highest gas price is $4.87. Now, in the UK, that's roughly $3.25, or I should say £3.25. It's nearly $5. $5 per gallon. That's what that is, that $4.87. That's $4.87 per gallon. It's the highest gas prices in the country, except for San Rafael. San Rafael, which is just a little bit north of here in San Francisco. It's about, probably about 40, a bit less than that. Maybe 40 minutes north, a bit less. Probably about 35 minutes north of San Francisco. Could be a little further than that. But it's less than an hour north of San Francisco, San Rafael. And San Rafael's prices are the only prices that are higher. So I was wrong by only 2 cents, because San Rafael's prices per gallon, San Francisco's are $4.87. San Rafael's are $4.89. And both of those are above the average for California. The average price of gas in California per gallon, $4.70. So San Francisco and San Rafael are above California's average and are the highest gas prices in the country. And President Biden talked a little bit about that. He didn't mention San Francisco or San Rafael. But he did talk about, I think he mentioned California, if I remember. But he did talk about gas prices. He did talk about the economy. And I'm going to play you almost the entire speech. It was roughly 10, 11 minutes. So it wasn't too long. And I got it almost from the very beginning of his speech. Probably missed about maybe 10 seconds of the speech. So it was him just saying his customary good morning or good afternoon. And just missed a few moments of that. And he started getting into his speech. So not very much missed. And when the break transpires and I return, I'm going to play you this speech. Because you need to listen to this. I think it's very important that we do look at when President Biden achieves something, or when he's talking about an issue that a lot of us are thinking about, but we don't know, we don't necessarily do podcasts on. Now, look, these are things that affect you every day, wherever you are across the world. If you are someone who drives, if you are someone who doesn't drive, gas prices will affect you. Because what if you are a pedestrian and you happen to get into a cab? And you find out that gas prices are so expensive. So, you know, if you're a cab driver, you know, that's money from your pocket. Now, you may get reimbursed, you may not. But it affects a lot of different things, whether you're a driver, whether you're not. And, you know, also, you've got to remember, we want to have a healthier environment. And it doesn't help when you've got cars on the streets, on the roads, spewing the very gases and the very, you know, running on gasoline instead of on electric. But we know that in this country and many others, we are still very much a petroleum-based motor vehicle world. Now, some people have hybrids. You know, some people like a Prius. Some people have hybrids. Some people have cars where, you know, whatever. I mean, they're more environmentally contoured, if you will. But the vast majority of us are gas-guzzling people. And we may claim that we care about the environment, but we really can't care about the environment if we are still driving around in gas-guzzling cars and not using electric. And the issue with electric is that there are not enough electric stations around where you can charge up your vehicle. So there has to be a lot more done about that. And President Biden in the past has talked about all of those things, and I think the Build Back Better bill and certainly the infrastructure bill are geared towards having more charging stations, because, heck, if you want to have a cleaner environment, a better environment, you had better start looking at electric. I mean, come on, I'd drive electric in a heartbeat. And if you could have enough stations to pump these, you know, to charge these things, I mean, one charge couldn't get you a good damn long way. You can almost drive from one end of the country to another on a one full charge on some of these vehicles. In the United States, you can literally drive from one end of the country to the other on one charge. You can't do that on gas. You would probably have to fill your tank 5 or 6 times. At least. if you're doing that from coast to coast on gasoline. It would probably be 6 or 7 times filling up your vehicle. I'd say probably even more than that. I've never driven from coast to coast. I don't know if you have, dear listener, but I, at least in the United States, you may, and if you're in a different country, I don't know if you've ever driven from one end of the country you live in to the other. But I bet that if you have done that, you've had to change your, you've had to fill up your tank at least twice. Even if the country that you are driving one end of, from the one end of the other to the other, even if you're in that country, if you're driving from one end of that country that you live in to the other end of that country that you live in, I will bet you, you had to fill that gas tank up a load of times. Even if that country is a lot smaller than, say, the United States is, or than, say, Russia is. So, anyway, all of that is to say that money will play a role, once again, in a topic that I will be discussing right after this. Pink Floyd with Money. And yes, you've discerned a theme here, dear listener, if you have been catching on, and I'm sure you have, that money is the focus of this episode, and perhaps the focus of your existence on this planet. Can you live without money, by the way? Could you live without money? I mean, I know it's an idle question, or it's not exactly idle, but it's not exactly a silly question. I don't think it's a silly question. Can you live without money? Or, shall I put it correctly, can you live in a capitalist society without money? That's really the question, isn't it, dear listener? I think the answer is a very simple hell no. If you live in a capitalist society and a capitalist system, you cannot possibly live without money. I mean, by very definition, you can't. Now, you may beg to differ with me, dear listener, but think about it for a moment. In a capitalist society, can you live without money? In a socialist society, one that's really much more outwardly socialist than the United States is, because the United States, by the way, is socialist in a great many respects. Your public library, your sanitation worker, come on now, you know, your parks, your roads. I mean, I can go on. Fire engines, you know, your fire department. You don't have to pay any money to have the fire department come to you. You get my drift. You don't have to pay any money to have sanitation come to you. They come to you, right? They pick up your garbage. That's a service that's being provided free of charge for the benefit of everybody. Right? For the good of everybody. Socialist. Right? For the good of everyone. Free of charge for the good of all. Everybody benefits from having the garbage picked up because it leads to a cleaner, more sanitized environment. And we like that. At least I like that. I suspect you do too, dear listener. And I talked about this just a few moments ago when I talked about gas guzzling. We want a better environment, or we say we want a better environment. And so one of the things that contributes to having a better environment, certainly a cleaner one in some respects, is picking up the garbage. Now look, when your spouse tells you to go out and get the garbage, and take it out, right? Take out the trash. I hope that you do it, right? I hope you don't sit there and strop. I hope you just pick up the garb, do as your spouse tells you, and take out the trash. Take out the rubbish, please. Because, you know, you're actually doing the environment and the planet a favor. and please recycle, then you'd be doing it an even bigger favor. I do think that, I'll put it this way, I do think that if you live in a socialist society, you can get by without money. I think you can. What do you think about all that? Do you think you can? You can't get by in a capitalist society without money, though. You can't. It's so interesting because I talked about this a few days ago, a few episodes back, with the whole thing with San Francisco, and San Francisco really being like any other city in the world now, where you've got all this gentrification. You've got people without homes sleeping on the streets next to buildings that are unoccupied that have been bought by investors throughout the world. That's a capitalist society for you. Empty buildings that have been paid in the millions by some investor who is not even in the country and has not even occupied that dwelling, that building. And it remains empty while someone who does not have a roof over their head gets to sleep up against that building right next to it. That's a capitalist society for you. And that's destructive. You know, on this episode, I am talking about things that I think we think about, and we probably think about them briefly when we walk past a person who doesn't have a roof over their heads, and some of us look down on that person. I know of people who do this. I know of people who keep complaining, oh, that person, and I'm trying not to say the word homeless. I know I've just said it. I really prefer to say people without homes. You know why? Because then it hopefully forces you to ask, why don't they have homes? Why are they without homes? And then you are forced to start doing a bit of digging as to the nature of that question, but the answer to it. Or you can extrapolate even more and say, well, why are people without homes on the street without homes, while people who have homes or people who have purchased buildings are not even in them? Yet the person without a home cannot sleep inside that building that's empty. You know, hopefully if you're of a critical thinking mindset, that might be some analysis that you choose to do, if you care to, because of course you may not. But maybe you think about the person that you see on the street, and as I've said earlier, it's holiday season time. It's holiday time. It's what they call silly season, where people do very desperate things for many reasons. You know, all this stealing and criminality that's been going on all across the country and beyond in other countries, and here in San Francisco. And by the way, I talked about this again, as I said, a couple of episodes back or so, and they've now arrested here in San Francisco. Remember, I played that audio a few episodes ago. They've now arrested 9 people, according to a local news broadcast here in San Francisco, who broke into that Louis Vuitton that I talked about in San Francisco's most notorious shopping district, the Union Square. And they broke in there and took all the jewels and everything else, emptied the place out, and they've now arrested 9 people. And now, by the way, let me just add this before I go on and talk about President Biden. By the way, they've now, here in San Francisco, said that if you want to go to these stores in the Union Square area, particularly places like Neiman Marcus or any of these very expensive and very high-end stores, you have to have a reservation in advance. You literally have to go online and book a reservation so that you have to be at the store at a specified time. Otherwise, they will not allow you in the store. You will not be allowed in. That is the new policy now. In light of what happened last Friday at the Louis Vuitton, they are cracking down. Isn't this something? This is what we have to do now. Rather than tackle the problems of people who are without homes, rather than tackle the problems of why there's poverty to begin with in the richest country on the planet, rather than tackle the problems of people who are in desperate straits in the richest country in the world, in holiday season, with a pandemic raging on, yes, that's still going on, rather than tackle all those things, it's, well, you have to make an appointment to come to Neiman Marcus on your computer. And may I remind you, dear listener, most people in the United States do not have a computer. Most people in the United States, 331 million people, do not have a computer and they do not have online access. So a great many of those people, or at least some of those people who do not have online access or a computer, and that's most of the country, by the way, don't let all these so-called Black Friday, or as I call it, White Friday deals fool you. Most people do not have computers in the United States. Most people don't have televisions either in this country. Most people don't even watch TV anymore. People watch things on iPads and iPhones and the rest of it. They don't even watch television anymore. I mean, I know people who don't have a TV in their home. But most people in the country don't have computers, and yet you have to get an appointment to come to Neiman Marcus. Like you're having your teeth pulled. You're an appointment to have your teeth pulled. I mean, you have an appointment to get the Neiman Marcus. I mean, this is where the future of all this stuff is now. You know, inevitably, this is what's going to happen. I mean, whether there's crime or whether there's not crime, I can see a time in the near future where it's going to be appointment only in all these places. I mean, my goodness, you have appointments for getting your booster shot, your vaccine shot. And by the way, make sure you get those, dear listener. I mean, it's now been approved for people over the age of, I think, 18 or 12. Booster shots for everybody. Booster shots for everyone. All approved over the age of 12. And by the way, California did that weeks ago. Even before the CDC or FDA or whatever the heck it is. The CDFDA. I mean, there's two organizations. But even before the CDC has even done anything with this, California already started to offer booster shots for people 12 years older and up. The rest of the country is behind California. And it is. Now listen, California is far from perfect, as I've said before. But the point is that you need appointments to get into these stores, excuse me? Jeez. And then the other thing is that in this capitalist society, you have people sleeping on streets. And yet we have so much wealth in this country, which means that there is a massive level of oppression by the rich. Because if you've got people without homes, wandering around, sleeping next to empty buildings that have been paid for by million and billionaire investors in other parts of the world, and you are seeing people on the streets sleeping, that is not something that's being done just because. That is by choice of the rich, and it's by choice of a system, not by the people, of course, sleeping on the streets. Although some people do make that choice that they would rather sleep on the streets than be in some shelter because it's too damn dangerous and too damn uncomfortable. There are people who make that calculation. Some of the people without homes have to resort to that. They feel safer sleeping on the street. But that's not the real point of what I'm trying to get at. It is a system controlled by rich white men. And that is a system of oppression. There are enough homes across this country, and there are enough buildings across this country where anyone who doesn't have a roof over their head could easily live. But no, it's this corporate office space that doesn't get used for 2 years. Or it's this investor's playground, and he or she or they are in another country and they have no intention of ever occupying the building, at least in the next 5 years. Think of all the people you could house in one of these high-rises that are being built, or that is built but not occupied. It's a complete waste of space. when you could be putting people in those spaces? Anyway, I could really talk about that for a long time. Money has really destroyed stuff. Oh my God. It really has. In some ways. Many ways. I want to get to President Biden now. And I'm going to play you this speech, dear listener. Roughly 10 minutes or so. And this was President Biden earlier today talking about the economy in the United States, talking about the gas prices and the economic recovery, which is happening because the economy is actually improving in this country. But the problem is, it's not improving for everyone. That's the age-old thing, right? It's not improving for everyone. And the everyone is black people, brown people. That's the everyone that it's not improving for. And there's still lots of issues regarding that that need to be addressed, confronted, and dealt with. Now, let me cede the floor here to the President of the United States.
6 million jobs since I became president on January 20th. There's a lot we can be proud of and a lot we can build on for the future. But we still face challenges in our economy. Disruptions related to the pandemic have caused challenges in our supply chain, which have sparked concern about shortages and contributed to higher prices. Moms and dads are worried, asking, will there be enough food we can afford to buy for the holidays? Will we be able to get Christmas presents to the kids on time? And if so, will they cost me an arm and a leg? I told you before that we're going to take action on these problems. That's exactly what we're doing. It starts with my port action plan, a proactive 3-month effort to invest in our ports and relieve bottlenecks. 40% of the goods, for example, that come into this country on the West Coast come through two ports, Los Angeles and Long Beach. To help ease the congestion at these ports, I brought together labor and management and ask them to step up and cooperate. To move from operating the ports at 40 hours a week at those ports to 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I provided the resources to other key ports, including Savannah, Georgia, and on the East Coast, and to help reduce congestion and undo damage caused by COVID. We also met with the CEOs of Walmart, Target, Home Depot, TJ Maxx, and others. Those retailers, large retailers, and others agreed to move products more quickly, stock the shelves more quickly. And by the way, you may have heard the CEO of Walmart yesterday on the steps we've taken. He said, and I quote, "The combination of private enterprise and government working together has been really successful." He went on to say, "All the way through the supply chain, there's a lot of innovation. Because of the actions we've taken, things have begun to change." End of quote. In the past 3 weeks, the number of containers sitting on docks blocking movement are down by 33%. Shipping prices are down 25%. More goods are moving more quickly and more cheaply out of our ports, onto your doorsteps and onto store shelves. And so all these concerns a few weeks ago, there'd not be ample food available for Thanksgiving. So many people talked about that, understandably. But families can rest easy. Grocery stores are well stocked with turkey and everything else you need for Thanksgiving. And the major retailers I mentioned have confirmed that their shelves will be well stocked in stores this holiday season. And that's good news for those moms and dads who are worried about whether their Christmas gifts will be available. It goes for everything from bicycles to ice skates. You know, today, though, I want to address another challenge that families are facing, and the one I think they're most focused on right now, high gas prices. This is a problem, not just here in the United States, but around the world. The price of gasoline has reached record levels recently in Europe and in Asia. In France, at the end of the last month, it reached about $7 per gallon. In Japan, it's about $5.50 per gallon, the highest it's been in years. Of course, it's always painful when gas prices spike. Today, the price of gas in America on average is $3.40 a gallon. In California, it's much higher. The impact is real. But the fact is, we faced even worse spikes before. Just in the last decade, we saw it in 2012 when the price of gasoline hit $3.90. We saw it in 2014 when it hit $3.69. And as recently as 2019, we saw it surpass $3 in many places. The fact is, we always get through those spikes, but we're going to get through this one as well, and hopefully faster. But it doesn't mean we should just stand by idly and wait for prices to drop on their own. Instead, we're taking action. The big part of the reason Americans are facing high gas prices is because oil-producing countries and large companies have not ramped up the supply of oil quickly enough to meet the demand. And the smaller supply means higher prices globally for oil. To address these issues, I got on the phone with leaders from other countries grappling with this challenge to try to find ways to lower oil prices and ultimately to the price you pay at the pump. So today I'm announcing that the largest ever release from the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve to help provide the supply we need as we recover from this pandemic. In addition, I brought together other nations to contribute to the solution. India, Japan, Republic of Korea, and the United Kingdom have agreed to release additional oil from their reserves, and China may do more as well. This coordinated action will help us deal with the lack of supply, which in turn helps ease prices. The bottom line, today we're launching a major effort to moderate the price of oil, an effort that will span the globe in its reach and ultimately reach your corner gas station, God willing. I've worked hard these past few weeks in calls and meetings with foreign leaders, policymakers, to put together the building blocks for today's global announcement. And while our combined actions will not solve the problem of high gas prices overnight, it will make a difference. It will take time, but before long, you should see the price of gas drop where you fill up your tank. And in the longer term, we will reduce our reliance on oil as we shift to clean energy. But right now, I will do what needs to be done to reduce the price you pay at the pump. From the middle class and working families that are spending much too much, and it's a strain, and you're the reason I was sent here to look out for you. There's another issue that I will be addressing as well. Because the fact is, the price of oil was already dropping prior to this announcement, and many suggest in anticipation of the announcement. The price of gasoline in the wholesale market has fallen by about 10% over the last few weeks. But the price of the pump hasn't budged a penny. In other words, gas supply companies are paying less and making a lot more. They do not seem to be passing that on to the consumers at the pump. In fact, if the gap between wholesale and retail gas prices was in line with past averages, Americans would be paying at least 25 cents less per gallon right now, as I speak. Instead, companies are pocketing the difference as profit. That's unacceptable. And that's why I've asked the Federal Trade Commission to consider whether potentially illegal and anti-competitive behavior in the oil and gas industry is causing higher prices for consumers, so we can assure the American people are paying a fair price for their gasoline. I also want to briefly address one myth about inflated gas prices. They're not due to environmental measures. My effort to combat climate change is not raising the price of gas or increasing its availability. It's increasing the availability of jobs. Jobs building electric cars like the one I drove at the GM factory in Detroit last week. For the hundreds of thousands of folks who brought one of those electric cars, they're going to save $800 to $1,000 in fuel costs this year. And we're going to put those savings within reach of more Americans and create jobs installing solar panels, batteries, electric heat pumps, jobs making those clean power generating devices. And by the way, deploying these technologies for each home where they're installed is going to save folks an additional hundreds of dollars in energy costs every year. Let's do that. Let's beat climate change with more extensive innovation and opportunities. We can make our economy and consumers less vulnerable to these sorts of price spikes when we do that. And finally, even as we meet to work out this challenge, it's important to maintain perspective about where our economy stands today. The fact is, America has a lot to be proud of. We're experiencing the strongest economic recovery in the world. Even after accounting for inflation, our economy is bigger and our families have more money in their pockets than they did before the pandemic. And America is the only major economy in the world that can say that. It's testament to the grit and determination of the American people, as well as our unique approach to this recovery and our focus on rebuilding our economy from the bottom up and the middle out, not the top down. Because of that approach, we're the only leading economy in the world where household income and the economy as a whole are stronger than they were before the pandemic hit. Let me close with this. This Thanksgiving, we have so much to be grateful for. Vaccines that are effective, safe, and free. Promising new treatments, providing for hope that we can bring an end to the worst tragedies of this crisis. Record job growth. The strongest recovery in the world. And most of all, the chance to be together again with the people we love on Thanksgiving. As you gather together with your family this Thanksgiving, I want you to know how grateful I am to serve as your president. And I promised you that I'll never stop working to address your family's needs. And together, we're going to confront challenges that we face them, are going to face them honestly. And that we'll keep building this economy around hardworking folks who built this country. Happy Thanksgiving. God bless you and may God protect our troops. And I'm heading to a food kitchen to serve meals right now. Thank you for your time and effort. And I'll have plenty of time to talk to you later. Thank you.
And the usual shouts from the White House press corps. And I'm glad that President Biden just walked off the stage after that. Now, I think that that was a speech that had to be made because there are a lot of people in the country who are very uneasy, understandably, about their situations, very much so, completely understood. And I don't know if what you heard there from President Biden would put them at ease a little bit more, but at least what President Biden does there is explain the situation, and fairly well, I would say, about what is going on. I do think, though, that there's still a long way to go with this economy. I mean, it certainly is rebounding. There are jobs in certain certain job sectors that are coming back and are looking good as this pandemic continues. And certainly the pandemic is something that has exacerbated things. But let's be honest again here. Let's face up to this. The pandemic is just really a symptom of what this system is all about. I mean, things would not nearly be as bad as if this system had really done. Let me just say that again. Things would be much better in this country if the system really was a system geared towards people rather than profits. That's not communist speak. That's not even socialist speak. That's humanist speak. If we had a system, if we had a system that catered to people and not profits, or at least catered more to people than to profits, because profits are not a terrible thing, you should have some of those, but not catering to people at all, or very little, is a terrible thing. And if we had a system here in the United States and any country or some of the countries that catered more to people, the pandemic would not have made as severe a dent as it did. And you'd probably have a lot more people in their jobs, even with a pandemic like this that continues to rage on. Because once upon a time in this country, we had CEOs only making, say, about 30 times more than the average workers did. Now you got CEOs making 450 and 500 times more, you know, or even 600 or more times the amount that a salaried employee in the same company is making. So you go from making 20 times more, and perhaps even in that 20 times more, the worker who's making 20 times less than the CEO is getting a nice bonus for their hard work. Now that bonus is almost non-existent, and any surpluses are going to that CEO. And the company now in this country is more based upon what a CEO takes in than it is the value of work that the workers do. And how many stock options can we stuff a CEO with? And how many times over can we give a bonus to a CEO? I mean, how much? Really? I mean, these got CEOs getting $50 billion, $50 million salaries or bonuses. $50 million, $100 million bonus. While people are starving in that CEO's neighborhood or in that CEO's town. Maybe not in his neighborhood, but there are people who are without homes who are sleeping in the richest ass neighborhoods in the United States. That's how it is here in San Francisco. Well, I walk down the street here. Houses are nice. Neighborhood's nice. And you got people without homes sleeping right next to these nice buildings and these nice places, these nice homes. And that is immoral. People without homes should not be even existing in the United States. And I mean by that, because that could be taken very differently from what I mean. Or I should stop, you know, because I have this thing about it doesn't matter what you mean. It matters what you say and do. So let me, speaking of that, let me actually rephrase what I just said. There should not be any person in the United States who is without a home, without a roof over their head. FDR talked about this with his Bill of Rights that unfortunately never really passed, because if it did, it would have made a huge difference. One of them was everyone should have a roof over their head. One of them was everyone has a right to a first-class education. One of them was everyone has a right to health care. One of them was everyone has a right to a living wage. You know, if we had a society like that before this pandemic came along, I guarantee you that you would not have nearly the kind of unemployment rate that you did with the pandemic in its infancy. I'm telling you, you wouldn't have. Because if you'd had a society that reorganized profiteering and reduced it drastically back to the times of the 1950s and 60s and even into the 70s, where CEOs weren't getting but what, 10, 15 times what the worker was getting, and in the 80s it was maybe 20 or 30 times, and now it's freaking 400 times. If we were back to the 70s standards of maybe 10 or 20 times more times what the worker was getting, the CEO, you'd have a lot less people out of work now. Because the company wouldn't be so profiteer heavy and dependent upon what a CEO makes. And the stock options wouldn't be flowing that way. So I think President Biden, I think just before the Thanksgiving holiday with that speech earlier today, I think doing his best to try to calm people and to try to reassure them, I'm going to do everything I can. Well, you know, the one thing he didn't mention there, Mr. President, if you want to do everything you can, make sure you lobby like a you-know-what to get this Build Back Better bill done in the Senate. And look, I've talked about Build Back Better ad infinitum here. You know that, dear listener. If you are a loyal one to this podcast, you know, dear listener, that yours truly has spent a fair bit of time talking about Build Back Better. And you see, that need to be hitched to the back of your speech, sir, Mr. President. And, you know, look, I'm not criticizing the speech. I think it was a speech designed to try to calm people who are understandably in a really rough place these days. Understandably. But what I think that President Biden should have said is, and we're going to get this Build Back Better bill done. It's going to do this. And he has been saying that on social media. Certainly in the next few days, we hope to have this Build Back Better bill voted on. It's not going to be before Thanksgiving, though. Now, wouldn't that have been a lovely Thanksgiving present? Thanksgiving president present? I think I said that the first time. Wouldn't it have been a nice Thanksgiving present to have passed the Build Back Better bill before the holiday? That would have been nice. Not so much. It didn't happen. But I really do think that that was missing today from President Biden's speech. because Build Back Better is going to help so many people who are struggling right now. Struggling about jobs, struggling about daycare, struggling about healthcare, struggling about all kinds of things. Social safety net program. I want this Build Back Better bill to be robust. I want it to include everything. The Senate, keep your grubby little hands off of it. You need to pass this thing in the Senate. And you, dear listener, need to be calling these senators at 202-225-3121 or 202-224-3121. You need to do that now. Leave a message before Thanksgiving. And then after Thanksgiving, leave another message. Call all these senators up. That's what I'm going to be doing. You know, I'm going to be doing that. Certainly going to be doing that. Leave a message with them. Leave a message. You need to emphasize to these senators in the United States how important this Build Back Better is going to be and how they must get on board and how the midterms are next year and how if you don't do this, we're going to be voting for someone against you. We're going to be voting for someone else. And it's time for you to think about these families. You've got Thanksgiving, you've got the Christmas holiday, you've got all kinds of other holidays during the month of December and into January. You've got Kwanzaa, you've got Hanukkah, you've got a number of other holidays. And you, Senator, need to keep in mind that there are people who are struggling and they need your help and they're looking to you. And if you disappoint them, we're going to vote you out. That's what you need to tell them. You need to tell them just like that. You don't have to be rude. You don't have to be nasty. Just tell them straight away like I just said it. We need your help. I mean, that's why we voted you in. And we can vote you out just as easily. When I come back, dear listener, a little rebuttal of sorts to President Biden.
President, Mr. President, I don't think you realize what's going on here. I can't feed my family. I got no job, Mr. President. I got laid off. My wife, she tried to help out a little bit, but guess what? She got laid off too. Mr. President, what am I supposed to do? Where are the jobs? Economic recovery? Yeah, right. What happened? What happened?
That's Prince with Money Don't Matter Tonight. Boy, that's a great video. By the way, it's shot by Spike Lee, if you do watch the video, which of course you didn't see there because you can only hear it. But that first part of that video, which as I said, directed by Spike Lee, I remember, by the way, more than 30 years ago when Spike Lee talked about getting Prince's ear in order to become, and he became friends with Prince. And it was quite a story he told about that. And Spike Lee and Prince were quite good friends indeed. And Prince helped Spike out on a couple of films doing some doing a soundtrack for his film Girl 6, which is not one of my favorite Spike Lee films, but it actually is a Spike Lee joint, if you will. It actually was one of the first to shine give a stage to a woman in his films. Now, Spike Lee has been notoriously, I think he has been quite misogynistic in some of his movies. Listen, I've interviewed Spike Lee 3 different times. And I don't have any problem saying that. He is there. Yeah, listen, he's admitted it, that he has not done right by women. So on his films, his wife had given him a go at him for that too. And as she should, we all should, of any filmmaker, because the vast majority of these male filmmakers are misogynistic in their portrayal of women. There's no right way around that. That's exactly what they do. And quite frankly, we need to all call it out and make sure it stops. I mean, really, and let's stop supporting that kind of nonsense too, while we're at it. So anyway, I just wanted to just say that and also add that the voice you heard at the beginning of that audio, which is the video called Money Don't Matter Tonight, and the word two is actually a number, the number two, off of Prince's album Diamonds and Pearls. I love that song. It's one of my favorite songs. Not Diamonds and Pearls. I like Diamonds and Pearls as a song. But one of my favorite tracks on the album Diamonds and Pearls is that track you just heard a part of, Money Don't Matter Tonight. And it's about... And the voice you heard at the beginning there was the actor... his first name escapes me, but his last name is Odom. It's crazy, I can't remember his first name. And he may or may not still be here with us, I'm not sure. I can't believe I've forgotten his name. Ray Odom? I don't remember. That's really bad that I don't remember. Tell you, you get older and your brain matter starts to betray you. And for some people, much worse than that, with things that we don't yet have cures for, you know, like Alzheimer's, and Lord knows. You just hope and pray that you aren't in a position like that. And I certainly hope that, you know, every time I don't remember something, I have to tell you, I instantly think about things like that. And I don't know if you do as well, dear listener, or not. But I do, often, which is not necessarily a good state of mind to be in. And that's, I don't mean to... Money Don't Matter Tonight. And that, again, you notice the theme here on this episode, dear listener, is about money, or the lack thereof, and how it played into some of the headlines of the day on this day that we are in now, Tuesday, November the 23rd, 2021, or whenever you may be listening to this. And it's not just limited to this episode, of course. We're already looking at tax season. Soon it's going to be tax season. Soon you're going to be getting your tax forms in. You're going to be getting your W-2s here in the United States. It's just, you look around, it's just unbelievable. We're only, 5 weeks away from the end of the year? Woo! Seriously, we're just 5 weeks and 1 day away from the end of 2021. It's amazing. But I play Money Don't Matter Tonight, a little piece of it there with the actor, I think it's Ray Odom or whomever, saying, look, I'm starving. Hey, I don't have a job, Mr. President. My wife is trying to help me, but she just got laid off as well. And, you know, my kids are starving. It's not funny. It's serious. And a lot of people are in the position, and that's just for a music video. So that's a dramatic staging of the realities of the everyday person in the United States. The vast majority of us in the United States are in the bottom 99%. There's the super rich, and then there's the rest of us. It really is true. And, you know, in that varying degree of 99%-ness, in that varying degree of 99%-ness, there are people who are doing well, people who are living comfortably, people who are getting by, and then there are people who are living paycheck to paycheck. And I think that's the vast majority of people in the United States. That's a lot of people living paycheck to paycheck. As I just kind of... This box. Anyway. This is true of countries all over the world. Where people are just living... That should never be. And if we had a more level playing field, you would not have to be looking over your shoulder. Oh my gosh, I didn't get my check yet. Can I hold on for 3 more days? Can I hold on for 5 more days? That's the calculus that a lot of people are making across the world. Can I hold out for just 4 more days? Oh my gosh, I can't wait to get to payday. And oh my goodness, just to make up this deficit before I get to pay off this bill or that bill. Or I can go shopping for my 3 kids. Seriously, that is going on in a lot of places across this planet. For millions upon millions of people. And it shouldn't be. While there are people on their yachts, people at their country clubs, living the good life. or what they think is the good life. Good life, good life, good life. Do you remember that song? Let me tell you. Let me take you to a place I know you wanna go. It's the good life. Hey. I can't sing to save my life. There's a song, and I'm trying to remember who sang that song now. You know who did it, especially if you're a person that likes to boogie down on the dance floor. You know who sings that song, "Good Life," and it's killing me to remember who it is. Anyway, but people who think they're living the good life are living high on the hog, and this is the thing. So this is the disparity. And so I wanted to play that video, by the way, because I do think that it's a rejoinder of sorts to President Biden, even though the video came out back in the 1990s. You know, it's kind of like Randy Newman, Mr. President, have pity on the working man. And I think President Biden is a president who does have pity on the working man and wants to make the working man, the working woman, the working person in a more secure position. But the way to really do that is to pass Build Back Better and to be the loudest cheerleader in the room for it, Mr. President. And, you know, we're all sitting here now, kind of on edge, hoping that this damn bill's going to pass and that these freaking moderate you-know-whats in the Senate aren't going to be tinkering with it and tailoring with it and putting their dirty hands on this. I mean, just pass the bill as it was in the House, as is. See, that's really real trouble when you have to actually debate whether people should get better things. That is a problem, man. There you go. That's why you got a society the way you got it in this country. Because you have to have a debate over whether people should have better things to improve their lives. There's a debate about that. How inhumane. I know there's a spirit of due process and, we have to have a deliberative thing and it's the world's most deliberative body. And no, it's not. Because you've got Republicans voting not to have debate on things. So we are not the world's most deliberative body. We're actually now the world's most tyrannical body because of the Republicans. But I just want to say that if we really want to have a society that is better, we're going to have to start telling the rich to pay their fair share, which we are telling them to do. And President Biden and other people who really do care, who say they really do care about the working stiff and about the middle class, they better act like it. And they better be lobbying these senators and talking to them and meeting with them. And I know President Biden has been doing that. And telling these folks, look, you'd better get in here and support these things for the American people. We really need to have that. That's why we have to keep calling these senators. And call the White House, too, is 202-456-1111. That's the White House comment line. Call the comment line. Seriously. I do think President Biden cares about people. I think he does. Now, look, I've criticized President Biden about a number of different things. But I do think that he does. I think he does care about having it so that more families eat. I think he does care that more families get to earn a living. I'm just going to start going into Glengarry Glen Ross. That line and the way I said it just now is straight from that film. Al Pacino. And then he just goes off on this tirade. You have to watch Glengarry Glen Ross, by the way. It's a really good film based on David Mamet's stage play, which is actually, I'm told, really good on Broadway. Jack Lemmon, by the way, Al Pacino, Ed Harris, and others in that movie. And Alec Baldwin's in that movie too, by the way. One of these is I'm going to talk about what's going on now with that whole situation out there in New Mexico. Remember the cinematographer who was killed by Alec Baldwin? Yeah, none of these media people reported like that, though. He killed her, okay? And, you know, her family must be going through lots of hell, to say the very least. And I know I sound so casual about saying that the way I've said it just now. And I am sorry for that. I think Alec Baldwin's had one too many awards slipped into his drink, if you know what I mean. And goodness gracious me, man. And listen, it's not just Alec Baldwin by himself, but he cannot escape liability here. And the piece of garbage who did put a bullet in that gun, that person has to be indicted for murder. Because you had reason to know that if that gun gets fired, and it's, or it's not checked before it is fired, someone could die. So whoever did that, whether it's the first AD or the production designer, whoever that first AD was, that's assistant director, first assistant director, whoever the hell it was, this person needs to be freaking well indicted and put up on charges and tried. I really do think so. Indicted on charges and tried. Seriously. Anyway, there we go. Oh my goodness me, dear listener. There's so much more to talk about. I could have talked about the meeting that was held today in London, the town hall. It was rather really a people's meeting, people's questions to the mayor of London and the London Assembly. That could have been something of a topic of conversation, because actually, quite frankly, a lot of these issues that I talked about on this episode came up during that meeting as well. There are people with mental health challenges all over this planet, and someone in that assembly spoke up about being without a home and also having mental health challenges. Can you imagine? There's a lot of people who have no home who also have mental health challenges, and it's a very difficult thing. Extremely so. And your heart ached, just aching, hearing this particular woman earlier today in London, in Camden, which is in, I believe it's northeast London, or north, I don't remember where Camden is. I should know this. I think it's north London. God dear, how could I be from London and not know where Camden is? I was actually in Camden Town just literally like two years ago. So, I mean, I got no excuse. Camden, by the way, is in North London. It's like, oh my God, how could you not know? And you were there 2 years ago. Oh, now I really am concerned about my memory and my, in fact, I can't even get a word in edgewise here because I know I'm talking all the time. And again, I kind of laugh at people say that I talk too slowly, because I talk too damn fast a lot of those times that I talk slowly. I think I'm getting a bit loopy here, and I shouldn't be, because these are very serious topics that I've been punctuating on and pontificating on this episode. And, you know, this world is in not the best of shape, shall we say. And I do think about subsequent generations, and I do think about the people who are going to be inhabiting this planet after we shuffle off this mortal coil and, you know, leave this place. And I wonder, what's this place going to be like 20 years after we're gone? You know, 30 years, 50. And then just the thought of that terrifies me. Seriously, 50 years after we all leave this place, what do you think the place is going to be like 100 years from now? Let's just leave it like that. Don't even talk about after you've left or after I've left or after we've left. Just think 100 years from now, what is this whole planet going to look like? Oh, I think environmentally it's going to be a freaking disaster. It already is that. But are we going to have robots running all over the place? Running to F all over the place? Are we going to have robots just dictating everywhere? I mean, are we going to have robots turning on and off our lights? I mean, we already kind of have that already, don't we? I mean, are they going to be flushing the chain for us? Are they going to be wiping our backsides for us? I mean, is that what we got now? Is that where we're going in 100 years? Oh, let me do that for you, Mr. Moore. No, thanks. Hands off. I can do it myself. I'm sorry. That's just, I couldn't resist. Dear listen, you have to put up a lot. You have to put up with a lot from here. But you don't. No, you don't. I just, listen. Here we are. It is Tuesday. And let's get back to serious things, like Build Back Better, like some of the garbage that's going on in the UK right now, with Boris Johnson absolutely determined to crush every last person who isn't rich in the United Kingdom, particularly in England. I mean, and then you've got people who are so incompetent, not even incompetent, they're non-competent at their jobs, because they just don't have any level of competency. And just despicable human beings too, by the way. And they get to stay in power, just like some of these tin pot fascist people do in the United States, who have an R next to their name. And, you know, anyway, we have a lot of work to do. And money, the root of, well, not all evil, but the love of money, I think, is the root of all evil. And there's a lot of other things that are the root of all evil, too. And that is love of money is certainly one of them. And quite frankly, if I should put this another way, poverty is evil. How about that for the root of all evil? Poverty is the root of all evil. And poverty should not be happening anywhere. And especially shouldn't be happening in a country where we have the richest people on the planet. It is the richest country on earth, the richest planet on earth. Oh boy. I mean, we really do need to reassess our priorities, because if we don't, we are really doomed. Money is polluting everything. It really is. And, you know, one thing I want to say before I go, that was brought up at the question time with the mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, and the London Assembly earlier today in Camden, in North London, was the idea of having more black and ethnic minority, you know, police officers in the police force. And Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London, said, actually, you know, we're really focusing on having more black police officers in London and beyond, because it's black Londoners who, and I'm a Londoner, look, just because I'm not living in London, that doesn't mean I'm not a Londoner. I think we just get so provincial about all this stuff. But we are citizens of the world, is my point. And you are a citizen of the world, and so am I. So even though you may have been born in one particular place, if you are someone who lives in London or have lived in London, and I was born and raised and grew up in London, but if you have lived in London, call yourself a citizen of the place. Why not? You now don't live here anymore, so you're not. And it's just all this territorial nonsense and, oh, we're better than you because we're Londoners and you're not. I don't think most Londoners feel that way, but I do think among some Londoners, just like some other people in any country, there's this provincialism about certain things. But the bottom line is that at the question time today for the mayor of London, Sadiq, he was talking about this, about how, you know, black Londoners would like to see more black police officers on the beat. And even though the system, of course, is the real problem here, one of the things that Sadiq said is that black cops should be represented. Black people should be represented because the community needs to see people who have their shared experience. And I totally agree. Totally agree with that. And now you've got to get them in. You've got to get them in. And even though the system itself is the big problem, you have to get a more diverse and inclusive pool of officers. It might help give some black people some faith and confidence in some of the police, but, you know, here in the United States, it doesn't matter if these cops are black or not. I mean, they're all viewed as systemic evils, which, quite frankly, they are, because you've got a lot of black cops who toe this white line and just continue to follow what their white counterparts do. And then you've got a few black cops like Carol Horn, who stopped a black man from being killed by one of her white colleagues. We need more police officers like Carol Horn and less like some of these black officers who've just gone along to get along. And by the way, speaking of black I do hope that the guy in Waukesha, Wisconsin, because perhaps some of you thought I wasn't going to ever talk about that, but I am. The black man who plowed into those people, killing at least six of them at last count, and I think all of the people who were killed were white people. And again, whether they're white, whether they're black, whether they're Asian, they are people. Who were killed, and one of them was a child. That so-called brother has to get the max. He has to get the book thrown at him. And I'd throw the book at him. I mean, personally, I'd throw the book at him. And he's supposed to be in court, I think, either tomorrow or Friday or next week, whenever the heck it is. I mean, this is just quick. Car plows into people at some parade or whatever it was in Waukesha, Wisconsin. And before I even knew anything about this, when I heard the news and I didn't know but I thought this has got something to do with Kyle Rittenhouse. That was my immediate thought. Then you learn, as I did today, that the person who allegedly did this was a black man. And for us as black folk, our heads do a collective drop. At least many of us, maybe some of us don't, but it's like, damn, oh my God, he's a black man. Really, that happens? Because the microscope and the lens is on you. And then you find out, oh dear. But here's what I say to that. If he's the one that did this, he's got to go. He's got to get a life sentence for that. Got to get a life sentence. There's no other way around it. Come on now. That's just absolutely disgusting and inhumane. And, you know, I know they say allegedly, but come on now. This is just horrible. I'm a lawyer saying come on now. I should know better. But I really do hope that, those families, horrible is horrible. Say a prayer for those families too, and especially with, you know, and so many people around the world are going to be without loved ones this year and this Christmas as well. That's when it's particularly painful for lots of people, you know. For example, Dante Wright, who was murdered by this killer cop in Brooklyn Park, Minneapolis, Brooklyn Park, Minnesota. You know, it's just heartbreaking. Dear listener, I hope that you are doing as well as you can, given these very difficult circumstances and challenging times. Please get yourself a booster shot. Please make sure you are fully vaccinated. So important. Please make sure you wear a mask. This pandemic is far from gone. And I really would like to see the African continent get much more vaccine, as I would like to see other places that don't have enough vaccine coming to it also. And please go to where the people are to get them vaccinated. Don't tell them to run around trying to find places and they don't have the transportation to do so. Don't tell them to go look in all these places and find appointments online when they don't have the computers to do that with and don't have the online access and half the libraries still aren't open, public libraries. Don't tell them to have to do all that effort. We should have a society that literally drops off vaccine at their doorstep. We should literally do that. I mean, come on, it can't be that difficult. Can it? Can it really be that difficult? We're the richest nation on the planet, dear listener. And if we can do anything, we can also do that. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore.